If this data is in like 4 or 5 platforms, when you're running marketing, you're actually wasting money because ads have no idea who to target. Would you want to pay for more clicks if 50% of the clicks, even 60%, turned into nothing? Or would you want to pay more and get verifiably trackable clicks that you know turned into streams?
Meg Fakadia,
co-founder and CEO of Symphony OS.
To us, it's worth spending more for that higher engaged, higher value fan than spending just for empty clicks after just the number Facebook goes at you. That doesn't mean anything in the context of your business.
Brown boys winning. That's the first sentence that Meg ever said to me, but it's true. We don't see enough South Asian representation in hip hop or in the music industry, so we got to support each other. And I'm delighted to be an affiliated partner of Symphony OS. And so that made this conversation with the founder and CEO even more special, to be geeking out with my friend all about Facebook ads and AI data intelligence. If you've ever thought about running ads to drive Spotify streams, you're going to want to take notes and steal this entire strategy, because Meg dropped some game. So let's dive in. How I understand Symphony, I think of it as an AI machine learning Facebook ads platform. And it gets smarter the longer your ads are running for, and it gets smarter the more you use Symphony. Can you kind of unpack that for me and explain what that means in layman's?
Yeah, 100%. Honestly, even taking a step back, right? Like, I think one thing we saw on our journey running ads for the industry, and like just built like at a very high level how ads work, right? You have people you want to target. They maybe click on the ad, they don't click on the ad. And you want to see if that actually impacted the metrics you care about. And time again, especially in our agency life, we would walk into, you know, kind of campaigns and ask the label, hey, like, what data do you have for us? And they're like, what data? And we're like, hold on, like, let's take a step back. Like, let's gather the data to start and have a real understanding of the audience. And then let's do the ads. And we're doing that by hand for so long that we realized that the industry was actually missing one place for all the artists data to live. We'd have our LinkedIn bios with like LinkedIn bio data, separate entirely from our Shopify, separate entirely from our mailing list, separate from our social media and streaming data. That was really the inception of Symphony. Was like, all right, like if this data is in like 4 or 5 platforms, when you're running marketing, you're actually wasting money because the ads have no idea who to target. So Symphony initially started as a centralization tool for data. Let's put all the data into one place. You know, let's have LinkedIn bio next to the streaming stats, next to the pre-saves and emails and all of that. And then let's use that data to build audiences for the advertising.
So
Symphony is like, it's the ultimate feedback loop, right? Whereas, you know, most of the time you're either looking at the data on one side, separate from the actual marketing efforts. But if we put the two together, we had a feedback loop where the ads run, you see your data, the ads learn from data, you see your data over and over again, the system just gets better and the data gets smarter and the ads get smarter. So it's really like trying to inspire a feedback loop between any data coming in and any marketing going out, and hopefully getting smarter and better over time.
And so is that part of the reason why you ask the artist to connect their social channels, collect their streaming platforms, so that it takes the fans they already have, and then does it find lookalikes similar to those? Does it find, you know, targeting those followers, excluding those followers by interaction? What's the kind of some of the interaction moments that the AI learns from in that process?
Yeah, a lot of it right now. So there's in my mind, there's like the marketing funnel, right? And the marketing funnel has different sets of engagement, let's say, for audiences. You have like the very bottom of the funnel, which is like fans who have given you money, spend money with you on Shopify. We don't have access to that data yet. That's something we're going to in the near future. Then you have the very top of the funnel, which is I'm a fan, passively listening on Spotify. You don't have my email address. I'm just like a number on a screen. And then you have everything in between, like pre-saves and then things like that. So initially, the way we built it out, and there's a lot more work we want to do on this front, but step one was, let's just build all the levers and data collection points into one place. So all the data feeds into the same system. And then you have a set of tools to act on that data. The next phase for us is basically combining the two in a very nuanced way, where as we start seeing different stats grow at different points of the funnel, the system can know what to recommend you at any given time. And then ultimately, ideally, give you a kind of an AI marketing plan based on where you're at and where you want to go. So right now, it's very high level. It's like, all right, we know like these geographies are where your fans are at at a social level or a streaming level. Let's make lookalikes based on that and target that. The next phase is like, hey, like, you just connect your Instagram and your Spotify. We found the overlap between those locations, and we know where your fans are presetting from. These are who we should target if you want to grow this or that. So it's very iterative. You know, it's like if we try to build it all at once, we wouldn't be around. It took some time to get to this point, but the idea was if all the inputs lead to the same place and everything that acts on data also talks to that same data set, then hopefully everything becomes smarter and more informed as a result when it comes to targeting.
I'm kind of blown away. I actually didn't realize that depth of how much the systems were all intertwined. Because I think a lot of my audience, especially, they'll be, you know, understanding the basic of ads. They'll understand what a reach campaign is, what a traffic campaign is. They've probably tried a video views campaign or an engagement campaign. And they're probably just scared by the idea of a conversion campaign and that confusing pixel. And it gets techie there. And how has Symphony kind of helped solve that by just paste in a pixel and here's a tutorial how to get that pixel. We'll do the rest for you. And my understanding is Symphony, in essence, programs your Facebook ads what to do, if that's a fair way of saying it.
Exactly. It's like we took our agency and just like automated it to an extent, you know, and like obviously there's still the magic of like strategy and creative that we don't provide and we let talented people do that side of it. But when it comes to setting up ads for very specific goals, there's usually one proper way to do it. The creative and the strategy is obviously the input, but the output goes through a set of systems. So the best practices of those systems, then we programmed it into Symphony. So for example, for conversions, right? Very annoying process. I remember when it first came out, still an annoying process, but at the very least, if we could start training artists to start collecting pixel data, having a pixel on their website, we could start educating them over time of why the pixel matters and how it's getting stronger with every campaign. And then show them the stats like, hey, you ran an ad campaign, like this was a growth after your ad started, like this is the ROI. That's ultimately, you know, how I think this all starts to make sense. It's a lot of different tech put together, and in a different world, it would have been very ugly and messy, and like we have a lot of work to do still. But for us, it's like, all right, let's just be very step by step. Let's start introducing these features as they come in. And then as we learn what's resonating, what's not resonating, move towards a place of like educating more of like, all right, you enable the pixel. Without the pixel, you might have gotten this many clicks, but your stats would have been like this versus with the pixel, you got
it looked nice. Like this. I hear that. That's a definite vision for you. The ratio between what I would say is what streams versus artist profile followers. Is there a way that one can map out that relationship? It's in, I spent X and it translated into Y. Because I think that's what marketers would traditionally struggle with. It's you've got some streams, but we can't identify which came from organic social and which came from paid social. Have you solved that problem?
It's a hard problem, man. I'm not going to lie, because we ultimately don't own, at least in our current iteration, we don't own the place of consumption, right? So if you're sending someone to Spotify, you're sending someone to YouTube, we can see on the holistic side, right, the growth overall for like even Spotify that could be impacted by a lot of things. We can see what came in terms of the ad spend. I wouldn't say we're 100% there in terms of actually measuring that throughput, but we introduced a Symphony websites as a middle ground.
Yep.
And so the idea for that is someone clicks on an ad, they see the Symphony conversions landing page, they click through. Now we have a layer that we own that the artist has access to anytime we can see the data for to see what's actually happening in terms of engagement from the marketing campaigns are running. And then another thing we're looking at too is velocity of change, right? If you're going 10 monthly listeners a day just organically, and you run an ad and you start growing 20 a day,
yeah,
you do 2x daily growth. That velocity of change is something that we're looking at introducing into the app as well. And that is something we start looking at when it comes to direct impact and ROI from any money you spend in there.
That makes total sense because, yeah, once you can define causation and you can figure out what was that needle mover that made it grow, you can probably look at your timeline and be like, well, the playlist hit here, but the spike happened here. So it's probably the ads.
More than ever, there's a lot of conversation happening online about how expensive it is to release music. And while I fully admit that nothing will ever replace the artistry and experience of a mastering engineer, Mixeya by DistroKid is perfect for an artist who is just getting started, low on time or low on investment. Using Mix AI is unbelievably simple. You just upload your track, you adjust the intensity, the volume, the balance, and the EQ off the track. And then once you're happy, you can click and distribute it onto the stores. It's just $99 a year for unlimited mastered tracks to add Mixeya to your DistroKid account. Or if you're not yet a member, you can sign up using my link and get a 7% discount off your first year. And that is distrokid.com/VIP/allabouthelping. Huge thanks, as always, to DistroKid for sponsoring the entire season 2 of this podcast and empowering smart artists with digital tools.
This is one of my issues with traffic campaigns. You know, where I run them all the time as our agency. And I've always found that you're paying for someone to click an ad, but what happens after the click is down to the Google Analytics or the other half of the picture. Like you said, the two segments of the pie, they might have bounced before they even got there. The website might be slow as shit, right? They might literally decide they clicked by accident, and you're getting charged for clicks on your Facebook ad, but you don't know how many turn into meaningful commerce or meaningful engagement. Yet they're cheap, and you got to pick your poison, because traffic campaigns are cheaper than conversion campaigns. Like, what are those kind of cost differences? And I heard you do some analysis and some on a pod that I was on listening to, and it was talking about campaigns that were targeting Spotify listeners, but also campaigns that were just targeting people interested in music. And the Symphony campaigns were slightly more priced, but they were much more targeted. Can you kind of expand upon that sort of space?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, there's so many ways to target campaigns, right? To your point, the traffic campaigns, like, you'll get a bunch of cheap clicks. And the question is, what happened after some of the clicks, right? Did they actually do anything? And so the question I always ask artists are like, should I turn on conversions or not? Is, would you want to pay for more clicks if 50% of those clicks, or even 60%, turned into nothing? Or would you want to pay more and get verifiably trackable clicks that you know turn into streams? And most of the time, the clicks are great. You can get cheap clicks, but I could spend $100 in India and get a bajillion clicks and look at stream.
Yeah, as we've seen it before,
you know, that's why we added conversions. So for us, it's all about that transparency, right? Like, if you know you're spending more and the UI is telling you that you're actually seeing growth, to us, it's worth spending more for that higher engaged, higher value fan than spending just for empty clicks. Actually, just the number Facebook goes at you, that doesn't mean anything in the context of your business. So that's how we kind of set the system up. You can do either way, traffic campaigns or conversions. Traffic campaigns always like 20 to 40 cents, depending on the asset. Conversions campaigns sometimes 30 to 60 cents. But you can actually see what percentage of those people actually clicked on a streaming link. You'd be surprised. A lot of folks, like, an artist might get 1,000 clicks on their ad, and they'll see that, and then only get 500 clicks to streaming.
Yes.
And those are the behavior that's already happening, no matter what. It's just now you have that visibility to that actually happening versus just like the clicks you got.
I said there's optimistic numbers as well. I think you might even see 10% of that, even like 1,000 link clicks, 100 streams. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think to your point, man, I think artists often ask about those streams are good, but they're so expensive. And Spotify's royalty rate being 0.004 cents. Why am I paying 60 cents for a stream that's not going to pay me back? And I had an amazing conversation with my homie, Andrew Southworth. And he said, it's not about what happens during the campaign, it's what happens after the campaign. And when you supercharge a song with a ton of streams, those become artists who follow your profile, who save the record, have multiple repeat listens, and your streaming in the next few months will escalate. Have you seen that in like the ratio of streams to monthly listeners to artist followers as well?
100%. I think like every single time we run a conversions campaign, what's beautiful is because it's filtering out all this traffic that's lower intent and not driving that low cheap traffic and only filtering for more expensive, higher engaged fans, what we tend to see is like the streams go up as they should while the campaign's running. Spotify followers go up. You start seeing a catalog lift as well and like higher song savings across the board because it's much more targeted. But then I also get artists telling me that they're getting DMs from fans on Instagram. They're getting followers from Instagram. We see Shazams go up as well. And so it's almost a splash effect, right? You're paying a little bit more, but the impact is much broader and much more deeper than paying a little bit less, seeing a bigger number, but then seeing no impact on the other side, which is what you actually care about, right? You don't care about you spending $100 on Facebook. You care about $100 turning into something on the other side. So you try and optimize for the other side much more than the Facebook side.
For real. I think the smart artists care, the labels don't. My experience with certain labels is vanity metrics. First 24 hours, first day, you know, they really care about these impressive, ridiculously offensive numbers that just say nothing.
100%. I think
that's my issue sometimes with the majors is that they're, if an artist is not doing that volume on that very first week, they're old news. And how do you kind of take that when artists come to you wanting this big splash versus you tell them that longevity in a campaign? How do you kind of tackle that?
It's interesting, man. I've seen that too, right? Like we'll see artists that have 500,000 views on their YouTube video in 3 days. And like, you can very clearly tell it was bots. Someone at the label was like, yeah, you know, we did a great job. The artist is feeling great. And the subscribers didn't go up. The comments didn't go up. The streams didn't go up. Nothing went up except that number that means nothing, right? So the question is, like, I think the optics always play a role, especially for like certain genres or certain points in careers. But to build a business in any vertical, music included, it's about building a real engaged community of people that actually come back consistently, consume your stuff, and then buy your stuff. So there's different ways to play it, right? Sometimes the optics helps build that. So sometimes it's balance, right? You might do some TrueView ad campaigns so your video has 10,000 views and then drive real traffic from Instagram to like actually a comment sub. But I think it's always a question of the artist, right? It's like, do you care about the moment or do you care about the legitimacy? And most artists want the longevity. The moment can happen. Anyone can manufacture a moment, but the longevity is how businesses are built. So we let them kind of pick and choose what they want, but that's the question I always pose to folks that are trying to figure that out.
Major facts, but they say they want the longevity, and actually their heart does want the viral moment. Even if they're not putting it out there, I've often, you know, seen artists who really are trying to chase one big moment, and they spend a shitload of money on it. Some artists would rather spend, you know, if they've got a label advance, they might spend the whole advance on the video thinking the production value is going to bring them results rather than shooting a cheaper video and then putting a larger budget into the ad campaign. And do you ever get artists who they come to you with an unrealistic expectation of the results they can look to achieve with the budget that they have, even at the higher echelon of the labels?
All the time, man. All the time. I think it's just human nature, right? Everyone wants instant gratification no matter what you're doing. And I think the way music has become and like how easy distribution has become, there's so many folks that are vying for that thing, which is like, you know, the moment, but also longevity. And it's almost two separate goals, right? It's like, if you want to build longevity, you want higher value, higher engaged people coming in that aren't always the same as the quick view or the quick stream or the quick share or whatever it may be. So I don't know, I have a lot of thoughts on that. I think like artists are starting to become much more aware too that the instant gratification isn't going to pay their bills. The longevity will. You know, there's artists that you never heard of, they're making 100K a year right now off the streams because they their audience and just doubled down on it. There's obviously artists like Lil Nas X and Ice Spice and Sexy Red. They're doing a great job. They had their moment and they continued maintaining it. But my mindset is like, all right, if you build for longevity from day one, it's more expensive, it takes longer, it takes time. But in the long run, you're building more valuable opportunities to monetize the audience you're building.
Yep. I was going to say the same. Real talk, you can monetize better later on. It's shorter change up front for securing the bag later. Like if I can't wait to start running some campaigns with my artists through Symphony for EPs. Because just by the very logic that your ads are going to get smarter with every single you drop, whether that's a waterfall method or whether that's single by single, you're going to get smarter. So your EP is going to be the biggest splash because the ads have learned. And artists, sometimes they just get it twisted and they downscale on the single, potentially, not saying for fact, maybe medium on the second single, but for the big impact on the EP. Do you ever, not talking numbers, but even talking percentages or proportions, how do you kind of do you strategize as a company for the artists that approach you guys, and how do you kind of advise them to use your tools?
To be completely honest, I don't usually recommend artists pay money to market their singles. And the reason I say that is you think about like the psychology of when a fan comes in, right? Like if a fan, say it's an early stage artist, the first single, that dollar spent on acquiring that fan will generally net one stream. There's only one song of catalog.
Yes.
Now you have two songs out, you spend the money on that dollar. Now that.
Whoa. Okay.
You spend that dollar, right? You have a fan coming in, they can stream two songs, two streams, but you have an EP out, 7, 8, 9, 10, whatever songs, that $1 turns into 10 potential streams and a catalog of work they can come back to. And so I actually tell artists like upfront, usually it's like, all right, spend a little bit, obviously spend maybe like 50 to 100 maximum on your singles, but focus it after the EP is out and make a plan for the 3 months following your EP coming out, not leading up to the EP. Because when there's more things for people to grasp onto, it's easier to sell them into your world. And when you're just rolling out initially, singles, videos, there's less for people to grab onto. When you have a bigger body of work, if you have more things that they can enter your world through, every dollar just goes farther, especially if you're marketing it after the project is already out.
That is a very unique perspective. I 50% agree and I 50% disagree.
What are your thoughts?
So disagreeing in the fact that I would turn on ads, but after the song had got to a plateau number of streams, whether that's 10K, whether that's 50K, whatever, because switching the ads on from the jump means you're using cold audiences to target people who could have heard the song organically. So there's either a cost inefficiency by paying to target your own audience, or you're speaking to an audience who simply don't care because they haven't gone far enough down the funnel. They're at the top of funnel phase and you're trying to be at the middle to bottom of the funnel phase, getting people to stream. Mm-hmm. What I do agree with is your perspective on like spend a little bit, but then after the EP, that's a really unique one I'm going to think about from now on, is not when the EP's out, but for the 6 months after the EP's out. I think maybe artists turn their brain off and they move on to the next project. And it's really refreshing to hear that you're focused on, no, you've put an amazing body of work out. Let's do it justice with the right number of streams. Even if we spend a little bit more that we didn't forecast to spend after all the costs of your song, you have a couple more costs to hit, you know?
There's also some more data out there, right? Like think about Spotify's data. You can see this, the streams per listener ratio. So you can see how many streams are coming in on average per listener. You can see the save rate, you know, say it's by my listeners. So actually this methodology I came up with, or just like generally explored, I used to manage an artist before I got into Symphony from 2020 until like halfway through 2022. And I used a strategy with him. He had a song from 2018 that I started working with him in 2020. That song had a 40 or 50% save rate. I was like, this is absurd. This save rate's higher than even your new songs. Let's just put $100 towards the song. Every day for the next year, you know,
every month.
A lot of money every month, right? And we did that. He continued putting on new bodies of work. You know, we did it with a little marketing effort to say, but every single time we run out of this one song from 2018, he continued to grow. 2 years of doing this, he went from 70,000 monthly listeners to 700,000 monthly listeners in real time, independently. Obviously, he was like reinvesting the money coming in from streaming, but we just found a song that had a very long lifespan, and we used the data, the save rates, to guide that thought process. And that song, for 2 years we worked it, went to, you know, 700,000 monthly listeners. TikTok found it after that. That same song we're marketing for 2 years, and he went from 700,000 monthly listeners to 3 million in 2 weeks. He went from, you know, maybe a million streams a year to 100 million in 2022 independently. And it's only because we had the data guiding us and we were just like, all right, this song seems stickier than all the other releases you've ever put out after it. Let's just keep marketing. It has life in it. And I think a lot of artists aren't trained to think that way because they're looking at major labels with a very different methodology of releasing music as a guiding point. The reason artists are rushed through releases is because labels have album contracts, right? It's like signed to us for 3 to 5 albums. Next year, next album, next year, next album, next year, next album. You always want to give people bodies of work, but it doesn't mean you should stop promoting your previous work. it could be promoted for 10 years and still have life left in it.
This is fascinating. I am blown away by those numbers. That is absolutely wild.
I truly believe that any artist can hit 10,000 Spotify streams by following a 6-week song release strategy, even if they have no fan base, zero monthly listeners, or never released a song. It took me years and years of pain and 3 failed businesses to figure out how to use social media storytelling by myself. But you don't have to do that because I've put everything I've learned into a free book and course. It's available right now from allabouthelping.co.uk. I hope it serves you more value than any other music marketing training you've ever spent money on. I am so proud of this endeavor, and you can get your copy of the 6-week song release strategy, my ultimate system, how you can take a song to 10,000 streams right now.
And then I want to kind of pivot and start talking about pre-save campaigns, but you know what jars me, bro, is when artists run ads to a pre-save campaign. That strategy just don't make sense to me because, again, they've never heard of you. So why would someone on the first instance go from seeing an ad, hearing a song, no matter how dope it may be? So I say all that to say, once I connected with the Symphony team, the one-click pre-save was a game changer. The forever save is a triple game changer. Can you talk us through those? What led to these features being built, how they operate, and just give us like the deep dive on those two, please?
Yeah, 100%. I'm super on the same page as you on all of those items. I have always historically, before we built this stuff, been like, why would I pre-save? What's the idea for this? There's 2 sides to it in our minds, right? I think one for the artist side, pre-saves, because they require you to log in to your preferred streaming service, are actually the easiest way to get your data out of every streaming service. Because Spotify knows it's streaming, but there's no one-to-one connection between this email address and this user on Spotify. So on one side, with the way we kind of set it up, is like when a fan pre-saves and they subscribe and opt into data sharing, you have now demystified this like crazy opaque wall that used to exist of like 100,000 monthly listeners. Who are they? What does that mean?
Yep.
Pre-saves are breaking that down, not 100%, but to an extent. And then the second side of the fan experience, right, when it comes to pre-saving, right? If a fan doesn't want to support the artists, and a lot of them do, we have 1.2 million fan saves since we started, like, through the platform.
Wow.
And so, like, fans are still going in and pre-saving their artists, their favorite artists to show support. But that fan experience sucks, right? Because, like, to your point, it's always like, yo, like, pre-save, next week, pre-save. And it's like, after a while, a fan, by the time the project comes out, fans going to be like, got to log in again and do all this again. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So that, the fan experience really is why we rolled out Forever Saves, right? Where they can one time pre-save and then subscribe to pre-saving all future releases. Because we have their fan data logged in within Symphony and the artists can track that too, we can kind of do that on their behalf. But I think the real interesting part for me is because pre-saves take a lot more effort than a stream, generally speaking, the fans at pre-save are actually lower in the funnel of engagement activity than the fans who are just streaming generally. And so what we're really interested in, especially as we're continuing to build out that tool set, is what other data points can we grab from those folks that maybe the streaming platforms provide us? For example, Spotify lets you see if the fan gives permission, lets you see the top artists, top tracks that a fan has listened to once they authenticate. So we're thinking about ways of taking this data and then tying it together with other data sources we're collecting on this fan, like, all right, like, you know, Meg, you got 100 pre-saves, cool, but like 50 of them forever saved and subscribed to data sharing. And these 10 fans listened to you 20 times in the last month. You should hit them up, you know, or these 10 fans, saved your song this many times, or these 10 fans, whatever, listen to these artists, and these are the top locations for these artists that are similar to you. And so I think it really kind of breaks this wall down that generally exists between like the artists knowing who their fans are and what the streaming services tell us. And when you have the layer in between us, like breaking it apart and giving that data back to artists, I think it's very powerful. And we're very early on in our journey of how we present this data and how we help artists use it. But the next phase is like, cool, like we collect all this data. Let's give you some more insights on it. Let's power your career even further.
This gasses me up so much. Oh my days. So I love, love, love that you allow the artist to extract the emails from the system. I think that's something, to my knowledge, Spotify doesn't allow you to do. The distributor don't allow you to do. That's a game changer. It's kind of like when I email my list for my social media, I'm saying you have to fill in, opt in to get a free social media training. But for my list who have already opted in, I give them the link straight away. And I would love for streaming to be able to do that as well. Once you've pre-saved, or forever saved, should I say, you don't need to re-pre-save. You should be able to get that full EP. It makes total sense. The underutilized feature, I think that when I start using Symphony for my artists, we're going to hammer, is redirect to a new link after pre-saving. That, to me, is where you get into direct-to-consumer marketing, where I'd make a landing page. I'd have a video hosted at the top, thanking them for their pre-save. I'd want to talk to the fan like they've unlocked some bonus content. And I'd have mini Dropbox folder full of some graphics, full of some videos, full of some bonus things that you can only get by pre-saving. And once the song is out, these assets are unique to those holders. Mm-hmm. Not as far as an NFT, but a little earlier in the process of that, more like DTC marketing. What do you think of that? Like, is that something you guys have thought about or even explored or consider building, anything like that?
Yeah, man, I love it. I love it. I think it's always like, you give a little, you get a little, right? And like, it's with any relationship when you're a creator, creative, or an artist, right? It's the same thing with your fans, right? You can't expect fans to just give without getting something back. We've had artists actually take the Symphony pre-save and use it almost as an opt-in for like, events. So it's like, go pre-save my song, pre-save my release for early access tickets or something like that. And so, you know, we've had artists do that where they'll take the fans who forever save and they'll give them exclusive access to shows or like behind the scenes content. Aside from that though, one thing that we're really looking at very, very closely, and there have been some stuff that came out around this, outside of pre-saves, what can we do to empower artists to collect this data at any time, right? No matter if you're dropping a song, no matter if you're promoting music or just promoting whatever. So one thing we're going to be building out, aside from anything even music related, is just straightforward data collection pages that are very customizable, that are very, very immersive too, with a bunch of themes and let you collect whatever you want. But our idea is like, all right, cool. Like, pre-saves are a great way to collect fan data. Why can't you log into Symphony, spin up a landing page and collect event RSVPs, collect contest results, collect fan club, invites and things like that, and then feed that data into that marketing system the same way, and let you even run ads that are like, hey, collect it to 100 emails. You want to find more people like this and collect 100 more? It's all I need. So all that said, first-party data is very much top of mind for us, and first-party data is a lifeblood for any paid marketing, and we have it all in one place and different ways of collecting it. Hopefully everything becomes stronger.
You know, bro, this makes me so happy. This is your full circle moment. Back to the start of your career. When you build websites, this is your legacy, homie, because this is how you're going to do it. Is you're going to go right back to the start, less customizable and flashy, but more the fan experience, bringing it back. And as we've digitized, we've lost some of the magic in the world. And I think we need to bring it back for real.
100%. I'm tired of just like the rectangles and the grids. You know, I feel like we had great websites back in the day that were maybe too big for a lot of artists. And then we moved to like link trees and like the same old square. Why can't you have a sexy little website that's still a link tree, but looks cool and lets you get your job done and collects the data you want? That is where we want to kind of take the tool set as we go into this year.
For real, I was interviewing Rob Abalo a few weeks ago, and he talked about artists' websites used to be their world, their immersive experience, where you would experience the bonus content via their URL. And it was a whole thing. And he said, you know, the fact that link in bio changed, people didn't want to leave social media to go to the platform. The platform became the experience, but it was limited by the features. And I like that you're, again, trying to solve all the best things in design from Apple or from anyone came from solving the root of a problem. And I sense that greatly in you. It's like you're a people solver. You want to take the pain that they're feeling and find a technologically gifted way of solving that. Would you agree?
I mean, you said it, Nami, but I would take the compliments. I appreciate you. But nah, man, I feel like people deserve like We went from like very immersive, very hard to build to super easy to build and super simple. There's a middle ground here where an artist can still build the world. They can still get their marketing done, but it doesn't have to be boring, basic, or square. You know, let's build some cool, sexy things that represent an artist and their colors, their fonts, their themes, but still let them get the job that they're looking to get done. That's what we're hoping to accomplish this year.
That's inspiring, bro. I want to thank you so much. Just before I let you go, where can people sign up for Symphony? I hope they use my referral link, which I'll put in the description of this interview. But yeah, tell us where they can connect with the whole company and what you can do for them.
Yes, sir. Yeah, symphonyos.co is our landing page, and symphony.os on all social media platforms. And our team's very active. There's only 8 of us, you know, very much, you know, try and respond to every DM. We're on the ground with folks. So please use the referral link below so homie gets a little cut. But yeah, check us out, symphonyos.co.
Huge love, bro. I've really, really enjoyed this interview. Thank you so much, man. Your sort of perspective is amazing. And I can't wait to do even more with Symphony in the next couple of months and years.
Let's do it, man. Let's run it up, brother. Here to help. Appreciate you having me on.